You're listening to Breakaway Wealth, the show designed to help you build wealth faster, think bigger, and break out of the herd. Now, here's your host, Jim Oliver.
Welcome back, Breakaway Wealth. I'm your host, Jim Oliver, and with me today, Joel Friedland. Joel, welcome.
Hey, Jim. It is so good to see you.
It is good to see you, and I'm excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today, because like you mentioned pre-show, is not something that we would talk about every day or maybe that we've ever talked about. So before we get started, can you just let everybody know who you are and a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So I live in Chicago, and I'm 64, and I've been in the industrial real estate business since 1981. So we're talking 43 years. And I am in the brokerage business. I broker industrial deals all over the country, all over the, in fact, North America and sometimes Asia and Europe, for companies that manufacture products and for companies that distribute products. So industrial happens to be probably today the number one favorite in real estate class for pension funds and other institutional investors. I've been in it from before it was popular. When I was in it, nobody heard of it. I'd say, I'm in industrial real estate, and people would say, you're in what? What is that? Because industrial's hidden behind other kinds of real estate. It's usually behind the multifamily. It's behind the retail. So people don't drive up and down the industrial streets and say, oh, I love being in industrial parks. But I do love being in industrial parks. And one of the things that I do that is extremely unusual that you and I were talking about earlier, most people have never heard of this. I'm a syndicator, and I primarily do all cash deals with zero debt. So I raise money to buy industrial buildings that are leased to manufacturing tenants.
Yeah.
And I raise money in increments of $50,000 or $100,000. And in a particular deal, I might have 70 investors or 100 investors. And we might buy a building for $3 million or $5 million or $10 million. And the idea is cash flow and long-term ownership, no flipping, not looking to make a killing, looking to make sure that I and my investors preserve our capital.
Awesome. You know, my brain goes to a lot of different places with this, because I'm going to have you like just talk about the difference between industrial and commercial, like, because maybe somebody like thinks, well, isn't that commercial real estate? So that's the first question. But it's funny that you say this, because when I first got started in wealth management out of college back in 88, you know, I was told the people you go after were the doctors, the lawyers, the CPAs, the executives in the right suit. And here's how you tell whether they've got the right watch on or the right shoes and the right suit, all this stuff, the right tie, right? And for a kid that grew up in Inglewood, it just always didn't just mesh for me. And so one day I'm driving down this road in Denver, it's called Evans, and there's this massive industrial places everywhere. Some small little welding shops and other places that were big corporately owned, you know. But I thought, I'm just going to stop in here and just talk to some of these owners of these businesses. And I'm going to tell you something you already know, but I was shocked about how much money there was there.
Oh yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute, these guys are in jeans and t-shirts and, you know, polo shirts and stuff. I don't need to wear this other crap and go try to chase down these people that everybody else is chasing down. These are my people. And that's really how I built my career. So I love that you're in that space as far as the buildings and stuff there, because I believe in that for, you know, so that was my first question, was what I said before, but also talk about how industrial real estate, because I love that you're not flipping it. I love it's for cash flow, because the cash flow in my goals, in my mind, personally, it's all that matters to me. But talk about how industrial real estate in the industrial sector in our economy is different, and maybe, I don't want to say immune from cycles, but just how it's different.
Okay, so first of all, let me define industrial. Industrial buildings have loading docks. That's the number one thing that separates them from every other kind of commercial. So if you're an investor in multifamily, you consider that commercial real estate because it's big, a big investment, even though I would say commercial is really retail and office buildings. When you drive down the main street in Naples and you drive by the Staples in Naples, or you drive by Michael's Crafts or whatever, or grocery stores, that's commercial. When you drive by an office building, beautiful office building with shiny glass, mirrored glass, that's commercial. People in industrial don't like to be associated with those other people. We're in industrial. Our buildings are down and dirty. They're boxes. They're big boxes, little boxes, tall boxes, short boxes. But what goes on inside of those buildings is very different than retail and office. Everybody's been in an office building. You go see your accountant, or you go to the insurance company or whatever, office building. You go buy products and you pay for it at a cash register, retail. Industrial, you walk in the door and they're not expecting you. Nobody comes to visit.
Right.
Because what's going on there is it's a big open warehouse with either dozens or hundreds of machines where they're making parts or they're making products. Or like Amazon occupies industrial properties. Those big buildings that you see on the side of the tollway, what is it, 75 by you and four, the big highways over there. You drive up and down the highways of America and you see these gigantic boxes that are occupied by almost every major company has to have a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Example, I don't know if that's a Shure microphone that you're...
It is.
Okay. Shure is a Chicago-based company. And of course, they have a manufacturing facility where they put their parts together to make what's sitting there in front of you. That's done in an industrial building. Or sometimes these products are made overseas, China, Vietnam, India, and then they're shipped back to the United States, but they have to go somewhere, so they go to a warehouse. That's industrial. And because of the growth of the internet, industrial has been growing like crazy. When a retail store closes, a warehouse opens. Hmm. Because when you order something from your house, it's coming from one of my buildings. That's what's going on with industrial. And that's why it's different. I love industrial because there's so many kinds of companies. Everything's different. You walk into a building and you, I cold call to find deals. I still cold call. I'm 64 and I still go door to door because that's how I find deals in my market. I have to know my market. We've got 1.5 billion square feet of industrial here, and that's 16,000 buildings. And I've probably been in 15,000 of those 16,000 buildings. So I'll stop into a building and I'll walk in and nobody's there. They have like a phone in the lobby saying, here are the people here and here are their extension numbers. Dial if you, and if you call someone, you don't know who you're calling, and they say, hello, can I help you? I say, hi, I'm in your front lobby. They go, oh, who are you? We don't want any. Yeah. And they have a sign on the door that says no soliciting.
Yeah.
They don't want us there because so few people do it. I get in. Hardly anybody does it. So I'll find out who the plant manager is or the CEO or the CFO. And I'll go inside the building and the guy will say, so what do you want? And my answer is, I'm looking to see if you might sell your building. I buy buildings and I lease them back to tenants. And the guy will say something like, well, would you like to see what we do? And then they're always really proud of their operation. So I immediately get a tour. Here's a great one. Did you know if you go to Chipotle or Morton Steakhouse, Trulux, any major restaurant, in their kitchen, they rent their knives?
Ah.
Why? Because they need to be sharp. So this guy named Cozzini came up with the idea of starting a knife sharpening business. So in every major city, they've got these little vans running around that say Cozzini, and they pick up the dull knives from the restaurants, and they deliver at the same time the new sharp knives, and they bring the dull knives back. And I walk back into the warehouse of this company. There's 60 guys wearing protection so that they don't get sparks in their face with little knife sharpeners, these machines where they go bzzz, and they sharpen the knives and then they put them somewhere and then they're moved somewhere else and then they're organized into racks. And that's an industrial company.
Yeah.
Craziest thing.
probably making a ton of money.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And see, that's the thing is, I think that people always think about that too with wealth is like, do you want to fly under the radar or do you want to be on stage? You know, and quite honestly, I'd never wanted to be on stage. I've always wanted to fly under the radar. So, you know, when I think about this, I sometimes think about like some of the things in trucking, right? If you want to know where the economy is going, look at capacity in trucking.
Yes.
Capacity. That means that we could be in for some rough roads ahead. If there's not capacity, that means the economy is growing and everything's moving because everything moves via trucks. So I kind of see this industrial sector the same way is, but guess what? There's always trucks moving and there's always industrial.
We are so tied into the trucking industry that it's almost, you can't say industrial without talking about trucking. I have an interesting story. We bought a building about 18 years ago in Elmhurst, Illinois, from the Keebler Cookie Company. And we got really lucky and we leased it to Comcast for 15 years. And then Comcast moved out a year and a half ago and I put it on the market for lease or for sale. And everybody looking at it was trucking. Mm. Every single company that looked at it, here's why. It was a 10-acre site with a 100,000 square foot building. And trucking companies need lots of trailer parking.
Right.
So I get this guy shows up. He's with his industrial broker, Chris. This guy shows up. His name is Alex, and he's got an accent. And I said, "Where are you from?" He says, "Serbia." I said, "Oh, what do you do?" "Trucking." "What's the name of your company?" "Super Ego Trucking." I said, "Oh, I've seen your trucks on every highway every day." He says, "Yeah. Sure, well, I have 6,000 trucks. And I said, "Holy crap." He says, "And I'm buying your building because I need the land that's paved to park my trailers. And besides that, Comcast had a call center. We need call centers because we need to fill up our trucks. So we have people work." So I said, like, I was freaked out that the Comcast building would be interesting to a trucking company. And Alex says, "What do you want for it?" And I said, $18 million. He said, "Make it $17 million." And we sold it to him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're very tied into trucking.
That is really cool. You know what I love about that story too? Is that somebody knows how to negotiate and get a deal done, right? Is I always think it's so funny. I just had this thing where I was trying to buy a car wash and the guy that was selling me the car wash, his books didn't match. This is a nice car wash. It was in the parking lot of a Costco.
No.
And so the land was worth like six. Everything total was like eight. And all I wanted to do was turn it into a not full service. I wanted to turn it into, you know, mom in a car full of kids could just drive. And if I'm getting gas at Costco, I'm looking at this car wash.
Yeah.
All I got to do is make it to where she doesn't get out of the car. She just drives through there and I will make a ton of money until Costco finally comes to me and buys the car wash. Right? And so, I mean, I had this great plan. Other than this guy, I couldn't get any banks to play because this guy's books didn't, his tax returns didn't match. Yeah. So he keeps my earnest money. We're in court, you know, trying to figure this out, mediation. And his first offer is so stupid. And the second offer is so stupid. So I just go, "That's the game we're going to play? We're really going to do that? Look, it's not that much money. I'm willing to just do 50-50. I understand you were inconvenienced. We missed the deadline. That's my team's fault." Boom. Guess where we got? 50.
Yeah,
it's like what we had to waste 5 hours. And so I like people because Alex said, "Okay, give me a little bit of a discount. I feel like I negotiated and away we'll go." Right?
Yeah.
And it's just being smart. But I didn't want to get us off track there, but that stood out to me.
Yeah.
It's tied to trucking because let's face it, trucking isn't going anywhere. Industrial real estate isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
When people think of commercial real estate and being in trouble, they're not like, that's too broad of a statement, right? If it was medical, well, that's not going anywhere. In fact, that's growing. But if you want to have like the Staples and all that and Bed Bath and Beyond, well, now you're in trouble, right? But what's interesting is there's always a niche for things. One of the things that I own is I own a warehouse in Nebraska. And I would tell you, it's one of the best things that I own because it's easy.
What's house?
And it's like you said, now I have to say I think of it. I do have industrial real estate. Now
that Joel educated me. Where is it?
It's actually in South Sioux City, Nebraska.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, you understand what industrial is. Once you own an industrial building, you understand it right away. They're very simple. There's a small office usually in the front. There's truck docks. There's a warehouse floor. Sometimes there's a drive-in door so you can drive a van inside. So, you know, the entrepreneurial owners of companies park their boat and their wave runners in there and their fancy cars. And they, by the way, anyone who's got an industrial building that's owned an industrial building for decades, they're wealthy. They have a company that's like a ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching type of business. They can get in trouble. But if it's a family business that's been around for decades, this is my typical tenant. See, so first of all, here's a key thing. We buy almost all of our buildings from families.
Right.
Why? You know that human nature is such, it's biblical. Families don't get along. Brothers don't get along. Cousins don't get along. So if we can get a starting 8% yield on an all-cash deal, we will buy a building from a family and tell them, we need 8%. So here's an example. We're doing a deal. I'll give you one case. We're doing a deal right now. The family is the owner of a 27,000-foot building in Niles, Illinois. And here's what they make. Have you been to garages, parking garages, or college campuses where you see the post with the phone on it and a blue light that lights up and it says, for an emergency call, you know, pick up the phone?
Yeah.
It goes right to the security department on the university, or it goes to the security people at the garage or at the hospital. This family was in the business of making those.
Wow.
And it's called Talk-A-Phone. Talk-A-Phone.
Hmm.
And the owners sold the business to a private equity group, and the private equity group cashed out the family, but the family kept the building. And they were leasing the building because grandpa started the business. It was a great business. It was ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And now the family just wants to not own the building anymore. So I know them, and they asked me, what would you pay for the building? And, you know, I'm going to round the number, let's say $2 million. And so I need $160,000 in net operating income on $2 million to make the 8% return. I like to have an annual increase. In this case, there isn't one. It's 4 years of $160,000 of income.
Okay.
And then they have an option to renew for 5 more years where the rent goes up based on the consumer price index increase from the beginning of that lease last year to 4 years from now, which is a 5-year lease term. But there are issues. The heating system is old, and I have to be careful. Even if I pay all cash, I'm not safe. Because something terrible could happen, like the heating system could go down and I'd have to spend $200,000 to put in a new heating system. But imagine if you borrowed $1.5 million and had 75% loan to value on that deal 2 years ago and had floating rate debt, and you thought you were borrowing at 4% and now you're at 8%.
Yep.
It wipes out the cash flow on the $500,000 of equity. And if something goes wrong, you don't have enough money. And in fact, the bank may say, I don't like your debt coverage ratio, and I want you to pay down the loan.
Yeah, I was just going to say that last part, because that is what happens.
So I am against banks. I have one bank that I like. But one of the reasons I like them is my highest loan there is a 30% loan to value, and they leave me alone. They don't want to see my whole balance sheet and the entire portfolio. They don't ask for an analysis of that every month, because I hate to say this, but banks generally suck.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're on the same page on that for, we could have a 4-hour podcast talking about that. Joel, I like what you've said. I think I'm trying to think of anything else that I would ask, just because what I would do if I'm somebody in the audience right now I'm intrigued, right? I want to find out more, but this is probably, you know, everybody tells me if you go 40 minutes on a podcast, nobody's going to listen to the last 15 minutes of it. So,
that's true.
So how do I find out more? Like, how do I find out if I love the industrial thing? I want to learn more. How do I learn more if I'm listening to this show right now?
We have a website. It's Brit, Properties, B-R-I-T with one T, BritProperties.com. And we have all kinds of information about industrial and investments in industrial and the difference between being an all-cash owner and having debt. We do sometimes borrow up to 30% loan-to-value, but that's our limit. And that's nice. Maybe once out of every four deals, we'll put some debt on it.
So that everybody understands, people that are in trouble right now is because of what Joel said before he told you where his website is everything seems great until it's not. And if you're not in control, when you have 70% cash in the deal and even 30% at the bank, you're in control. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out 70% controls the deal, right? When it's the other way around,
yeah,
and the bank has 70, they're in control. And whoever controls the money makes the money and they don't blow up the deal. And if you've never gone to your bank that you think is your best friend and they turn your line of credit into a loan or have you pay down the loan, they only do it when you're struggling. So don't worry. It's only when you're struggling will they do that.
Yeah. Banks are modern slavery.
They are. I agree.
And they have no sense of humor if something bad happens and you're too tight. I've been there. You know, I've done this for 43 years. I've had 100 buildings. I've had a lot of loans. And I've had four down cycles. And I can tell you that every time the interest rates go up and people say, I didn't expect that. Like, well, why didn't you expect that? Are you not a student of history? Are you too stupid to know that rates in 1981 were 17% and it could happen again? Yeah. Like, look at our economy. Look at the debt. Something bad's happening soon. Don't get deep into debt.
It's math. And so go to the website. How about YouTube, Instagram, any of those things?
Yeah, we've got a bunch of podcasts. And I don't do that. I'm 64. So my son and my partner and the other people in the office do all that. I'm the one talking, but I'm not the one who knows anything about it.
So can they get to all of those things from the website?
Yeah, Brit Properties with one T.
All right. So I want everybody to go educate themselves and dive as deep into it as you want to. But the one thing that, and there's no excuses, because I heard Joel say they take people with 50 grand, 100 grand. I mean, like, so it's, you know, we've had some concepts on here where people have to have a half a million, a million, whatever. I love that. I love what you're doing. All right. So again, trying to listen to the podcast gurus, I'm going to kind of wrap us up here, but I got two questions for you, Joel, before we wrap up. The first question is, what's the best advice anybody's ever given you?
So I met a guy from Canada who said to me, I'm going to give you the best advice I ever got. I hope it's the best advice you've ever gotten. And it turns out it is the best advice I've ever gotten. The letters WAIT. What do they mean? Two things. One, when you're talking to somebody and you open your mouth impulsively and say something stupid, you cannot take it back. Whether it's your wife, whether it's your friend, it's a business thing. Sometimes waiting, just wait. Wait and don't say anything. Just listen and don't be a big shot. But here's what WAIT stands for. Before you open your mouth, remember these words. Why am I talking?
I love that. Yeah, I love that. You know, it's so true. How many times that our emotions get the best of us and we think that that person needs to hear what we are about ready to spew out of our mouths and we haven't even really thought it through or anything else. And like you say, whether it's in a personal relationship or something like that. So I love that. We'll put that in the show notes for everybody too, so that they remember, why am I talking? Right? I love that. All right. Second question is, if God came down from heaven and only allowed you to retain the knowledge that you've received from one book, not the Bible, what would that book be?
That book is called The Four Agreements by Ruiz. You know that one?
I do. You know, it's funny because I think that that book is underappreciated, because The Four Agreements, if you don't know, there's a couple of them that I think that I like have to remind myself is, one, don't take anything personally.
Don't take anything personally.
Be impeccable with your words. Don't assume anything.
Always do your best.
Yeah. So those four things and how he dives into it in the book, I would recommend anybody that hasn't read that book, read it, listen to it, however you consume your books. That's a great one. I'm not sure I've had anybody with that one in a while. I get a lot of rich dad, poor dads. I get a lot of stuff like that, but I love that, the four agreements. And I was just looking at that over the weekend because I was talking to somebody about, they were looking for a book and for their kid that was in their 20s. And I said, I'll tell you what, here's a really good book that you can read. It's a quick book. It's easy to understand. And yeah, I love that book. All right, Joel, I really appreciate your expertise. And anytime you've been doing something 40 years, you get good at it. And I tell people, you know, look, if we're going to go climb Mount Everest, we can get like the best of all the equipment, the best jackets, gloves, you know, goggles, everything. But I'm going to find us the Sherpa that's been up and down that mountain more than anybody else. And I don't want the guy that's the first day. So I appreciate and value your experience because you know what? A lot of things aren't rocket science unless you're doing them for the first time. And then a lot of things feel like it's rocket science, right?
Yeah. I would not mind being called a Sherpa because first of all, they have humility, right?
That's right. Yeah.
They know everything, but they're not know-it-alls and they're helpers right. And they're givers and they protect you and they know. I love that.
And by the way,
that's a great one.
And by the way, they wait before they speak, right? Because they want they're going to let you be you can be the show. I'm just going to make sure we get up and down this mountain. And, you know, look, if you think about it, what you do with your investors, you know, you're being a Sherpa. There's a lot. I'm sure you get investors. They come in want to tell you everything they know about real estate. They want to tell you everything, how much money they got, all this stuff. And you're like, okay, I'm going to protect you from yourself up and down this mountain.
So the weight thing is really important. And we could do a song. We could do W-A-I-T.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I love it. All right, Joel, thank you so much for being on the show. And audience, we're going to wrap this up like we do every week with the incredible words of Earl Nightingale and The Strangest Secret. So take it away, Earl.
Here's the key to success and the key to failure. We become what we think about. Now let me say that again. We become what we think about.
Once again, thank you so much for taking the time to hear what was shared on today's podcast. If you are looking to discover new wealth building strategies, then go to community.createtailwind.com. That's community.createtailwind.com to join our free online community and get access to free courses and in-depth training videos designed to help you build wealth and break away from the herd. Click the link in the show notes to access the community today. Thanks again for listening.